Let me just thank everyone for joining us today for Give Me 5 Building OzDBU Relationships. I'm Scott Nolan, Give Me 5 Program Coordinator at Women Impacting Public Policy. The Give Me 5 program, named after the 5% federal contracting goal set by Congress in 2000, is a national program for Women Impacting Public Policy and American Express Open, designed to provide business education tools for women business owners to help them apply for and secure federal procurement opportunities. Today's training session will focus on speaking with your OzDBU and developing a relationship with them as a key step on the road to winning federal contracts. Our speaker today is Jennifer Busegli. Jennifer is an award-winning business owner of a multi-million-dollar supply chain and logistics company that helps create comprehensive supply chain optimization and risk management solutions for numerous government agencies, including Customs and Border Protection, Food and Drug Administration, Defense Logistics Agency, and the U.S. Navy. She serves on the Executive Logistics Council for National Defense Industrial Association, ACTIAC Cyber Special Interest Group's Vice Chair, as the Supply Chain Risk Management Committee Lead for NDIA's Cyber Council. Ms. Busegli is an active member of the Women in Defense and Women's Presence Organization. She is a recipient of the American Express Open's Government Contractor of the Year 2010, Enterprising Women's 2009 Enterprising Woman of the Year Award, as well as Washington Business Journal's 2009 Women Who Mean Business Award. She's a national founding member of Women Impacting Public Policy and currently serves as chairman of the board of directors and sits on the board of advisors. For her work with WIP, Jennifer has received the 2007 Presence Award. Jennifer, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Scott, and welcome everybody to today's session. I can honestly say, as we travel the country and do different presentations for Women Impacting Public Policy, one of the main focus areas, if you will, besides just how do I market myself to the government, is how do I talk to the small business office and the myths around that. So I was very happy when Scott asked me to do this presentation. So we're just going to get started. From a presentation standpoint, I thought it made sense to kind of talk a little bit about what the role of the OzDBU was, which is the Office of Small Disadvantaged Business Utilization. What is the role of the actual OzDBU director? So as we go online, we look at the different agencies and you look at the organizational structure of that small business office or that OzDBU. When you see the director's name, do you call them? Do you call the people below that? How does that work? How the OzDBUs are organized? And then I kind of summed up the actual presentation into three best practice areas when working with the OzDBU or any small business office, being before you get there, while you're in the office, and then as a follow-up. And as Scott mentioned, if you have any questions, feel free to submit them at any time online. The role of the OzDBU, and I'm not going to read all of this, but the gist of it, if you will, it is actually in legislation, and it's there to enable or to roll out the policy, implement the policy of the government to provide maximum practical opportunities within acquisition for small businesses, small disadvantaged businesses, and women-owned businesses. The key is from each agency that they're supposed to measure and report on that, and we'll talk about how that functions here shortly. In fact, the role of the director is really to make sure that all that reporting occurs. So their jobs are to review and evaluate whether the acquisition plans of the agency reflect the maximum potential of small businesses. They're also there to prepare for the head of each of their agencies, the annual small business the numbers, to make sure that the goals and the strategies in place are actually achieving the numbers that they desire them to be making. Evaluate the compliance of prime contractors within the subcontracting plans, and we know that there's been a lot of work to make sure that there's actually some teeth there and more of that, but it all really comes down to the relationships you have with those large businesses, making sure that you actually get work when you're a sub on the contract. And then if there's any opportunity for incentives, I know personally a few of the primes that I've worked with actually get looked at more favorably during recompetes when they have had a subcontracting plan submitted that they actually adhere to or in many cases beat the numbers of their subcontracting plans. There are perks when the small business office is active and involved in contracting. How are the OzDBUs organized? Again, this is a question we get frequently, and my answer, and I'm going to say it a few times during this presentation, is to do your research. because it varies by agency, the size of the OSDBU, as well as how the OSDBU is actually organized. So all the OSDBUs have a director. Some of them have people in between the director and the different socioeconomic representatives, and some of them go right to the socioeconomic representatives. So sometimes you'll have a director, and then directly reporting to them will be a separate person that handles women-owned businesses versus HUD zones versus 8As. Sometimes one representative will have multiple hats, and sometimes you have a couple different layers of oversight between the director and those specific representatives. So you really want to know how your OSDBU for the agency that you're focused on is organized so that you can understand the best person to talk to. As I mentioned before, from the actual best practices, I summed it up into three areas: before you go in, when you go in, and then after you leave. So the first one, from a best practice standpoint, I don't think anyone can stress enough, it's simply that you need to be prepared. You need to review that agency's website to understand their mission, how that agency is set up overall, how they function. Do they do their work here in the United States? Does most of the work and the procurements happen outside the United States? Where do they do actually their procurements? Do they do them in Washington, D.C., or do they have contracting sites spread throughout the country? If they do have contracting sites spread throughout the country, chances are they actually have small business liaisons that are spread throughout the country. So it's very good to understand how that works. For example, for my own business, the Navy is one of our target agencies, and we've become from a working relationship, very friendly with one of their contracting sites in Philadelphia that actually handles the entire Eastern Seaboard. So their name is actually contracting officer for Norfolk, which is in Virginia, but it's actually located in Philadelphia. So you need to understand not just by name, but actually how they're set up, so that it's very easy for you to form relationships so that when opportunities come through that small business office, they think of you as frequently as you think of them. So understand how that agency is set up. What contract vehicles do they use? Not everyone uses a GSA schedule. So does the agency have their own schedules that they like to use? For example, Homeland Security uses a First Source or an Eagle or PACS or some other vehicle that's internal to them. Most agencies do have their own vehicles these days. So do they lead with their own vehicles, or do they like to use GSA, or do they like to do direct contracts based on what you're actually selling from a product or a service? It's very important to understand how that agency likes to buy. Does the agency need what you have as a product or service? Again, very important to understand. We all hear that the government buys everything, but not every single agency buys everything. So have you gone out to FBO or FedDizOps and actually looked, based on your NIACS code, who's buying, when they last bought, when they'll be buying again? Have you done all of that research so that you know when you go in to talk to the small business office, you're extremely informed, because they have thousands of small businesses to work with, and you need to know more about your business and your fit for that agency than they do. So does the agency have a need for your product or service? And all of the information about when are they going to need it again and who actually buys that is very, very key to having a successful meeting with your small business office. And then it's always suggested to prepare a one-page document as a read-ahead. Whenever I go into my small business office, I have always sent an email ahead of time asking for a 20 to 30-minute briefing, so that they understand that you have your message very on point and very succinct. And included in that is a one-pager so that they have a read-ahead, so that when you get into that office, they already know a little bit about your organization, not a huge PowerPoint deck, but a one-pager. The one-pager said, this is your NIACS code, this is some of your past performance, this is some of the things that your some of your capabilities. In that email, if I have any specific opportunities that I am looking to pursue in that agency, or where that contracting office, where that small business office is located, I normally put that in there as well to say, these are some of the areas that I would like to talk about with you. Again, I want to make sure that I have a very, very successful meeting. So the more that I personally prepare, and the more that I'm able to prepare that small business person before I meet with them, the better off we're all going to be. when you actually get on site, now you want to make sure that you're interested. And I think you actually change the game based on your competitors. Often when you go in and actually try to have a dialogue with that small business person versus just showing up and just giving them a stream of commentary about what you and your business does. They are talked to all day, so you can imagine even personally, it would be nice to be able to have a two-way conversation with a small business that comes in, and that's actually how you form a relationship with people. So be able to ask informed, intelligent questions. You've done your homework. You know about the mission of the organization. You know how contracting occurs. If you don't know how contracting occurs, here's a great time to ask it, but make sure that you've done the research to say, this is my product, this is when it was last purchased, these are the contracting people that purchased it, where would I find those people? So you can, again, have an informed, intelligent conversation, and you're actually asking them questions that will give you background and information to use going forward versus just telling them straight out of the box all about you and pretty much shutting off a two-way conversation. The other thing to understand is that the Ozdaboos will not buy what you're selling necessarily. So when you go in to talk to them, realize they're not contract holders. They're not doing the awards. They do have influence, and we're seeing more and more Ozdaboos being pulled in earlier and earlier into acquisition strategies. But realize that they cannot sit there and just say, okay, we'll give you an award. You're not submitting RFPs to them. They are there from an advisory standpoint. It's always good as you start to form the relationship. Once you've done your homework, you can see who primes were on the work before. You may have already, and we'll touch on this as well, have had informal or formal networking outreach to those primes to find out who they're working with, who their subs are. Ask the agency who they like to work with. So, you know, I saw that Accenture, Booz Allen, CFC, whoever the normal is for your sector, I saw that they have already won this work, or they won this work in the past. How do you hear they're doing? You know, depending on how involved and how much preparation that you've provided that small business person, they may or may not be able to share that information with you. But they normally do have a list of the more active, like the top five primes for that agency, both large and small businesses. And that should be information that's public. They should be able to share with you if they collect it. So it's always a fine question to ask. You can also validate the type of vehicles that they like to work with while you're in front of them. So this is what I saw, this type of product or service, my product or service bought on before. Do you think that's normal? Are we going to continue down that path with that type of contracting vehicle, so on and so forth? Agencies forecast. Most of your agencies are trying to put this online. So if you've not grabbed it online, I would even just ask the question if it's online. Some agencies like Homeland do print them out and have them in their office, and they're 3 and 4 inches thick. I don't know if you really want to walk around Washington, D.C. or wherever you're marketing to a small business with that packet, but I think it's a great time while you're doing your research before you go in to look online and to see if their forecast is posted. If it's not, feel free to ask if they're actually putting something together or where you can get their forecasted contracting opportunities. Again, it's an absolutely legal question to ask and something that if you can't find it online, I would expect you to ask when you go in and meet with them. So after you get through the meeting, what do I do next? I never leave any sales meeting, whether it be a small business person, whether it be a program person, or even it just be a networking opportunity that I'm at another company's office or meeting with them over a drink, what have you. I always talk to my folks about make sure that you leave with your ticket stamped. I always want to have a reason for follow-up. Even if it's as simple as a question that was open-ended in the meeting or somebody else you think that they should speak with or you know, anything that makes sense to you and your business, you want to make sure that you have your ticket stamped. You have a reason to go back in and speak with them. So if you've decided this agency is a good target for you, make sure that you do stay in touch and that you do all the follow-up that you agreed to. Even if they're not a good agency for you, please make sure that you send them a thank you email as a follow-up that, again, includes your one-pager so that they remember that they had seen you. It'll also make a difference that you said a thank you because not everyone does. If it is a target agency for you. Make sure that you're watching for events that the agency is going to be at to make sure that they see you. It's all about forming the relationship with those folks. Again, you're trying to differentiate yourself from the thousands that are also marketing to them. Every time you see them, I would not give them your one-pager or your corporate capability PowerPoint or whatever flyer that you have. I personally, when I see folks at events, I may give them my card, but I'm more apt to get their card and to follow up and say it was nice to see you at event XYZ. Because, again, you have to figure they're getting tons of information constantly. People, especially at trade shows and when they go out and speak on panels, people are always trying to rush up there to speak with them. So isn't it nice just to say, hi, I'm Jennifer Bisekley. I met in your office last month. Shake their hand. Say, great presentation. I'll follow up with you later when you're not so busy. Once again, you're going to stand out in their memory because they're going to remember that you did not push a lot of information onto them, and you just start seeing them routinely around town, and that's a good thing for you. The other thing is that the government has gone very, very much online. So if they're on LinkedIn or GovLoop or Facebook, believe it or not, a lot of the agencies do have representation on Facebook. Feel free to connect with them because, as I mentioned, it is all about staying in touch. I personally, for the agencies that I have decided are target agencies, I will connect with a minimum of 4 times a year. Once a quarter, whether it be an email, whether it be a phone call. I try to go in and see them at least twice a year face-to-face so that they remember my name and my face if I haven't seen them at events. Just touching base, here's an update on what we've been doing. Here's a new past performance. You know, anything that you know, even once you start forming a more informal relationship with them, if you know that they're a sports fan or what have you, is this of interest to you? Anything to start forming a relationship with them that makes them think of you. We had one agency out of the blue asked us around our capabilities on SAP, and I don't know that we had ever really told them that we worked with SAP, and here, because they had an IT requirement, we were one of the few small businesses that they reached out to for a capability statement around it. So remember, they're people. They like to work with people. They do have influence, and depending on the agency, again, we're seeing more and more small business offices pulled further up into the acquisition cycle, so they'll have more information about what's coming out. The other thing to understand as a person is where they've come from in the ranks, whether they are brand new out of school and this is their first job, whether they've only been in OSDBOOs in the past and just moved around by agency. My personal favorite is when they've been a contracting officer and then they've moved into the OSDBOO, because now you have someone that actually understands the government acquisition cycle ins and outs, and that's a very powerful knowledge base to pull from. So it's good to know them as people, not just as small business representatives. And it's not when you go in to speak with the small business representative, you want to make sure it's some sort of a win-win. They need to be able to show that they are meeting and bringing into the agency smart, informed, capable small businesses that can add value to that agency. It's not all about when you show up, I'm a hub zone organization, what can you give me that's in a hub zone acquisition strategy? It's more of a, we do great work. This is where we've worked before. This is where we've had great success before. Oh, by the way, we're a hub zone. What do you see in your pipeline? So with that, Scott, I'll turn it back to you.
Great. Thank you very much, Jennifer. I would like to invite everyone to please take a minute to enter any questions you might have in the discussion box at the bottom of your screen. You can also send them to me at a later date if you would like via email at snolen@wip.org. And I'll just start off the Q&A with a question that I have for Jennifer. What do you see as the most common mistakes that people make when they're talking to their OSDBOOs?
I think, one, I have so many people that actually don't understand what the OSDBOO does. And so I think it's extremely important, one, to understand. So from a mistake standpoint, people think they're equal to the program people and that they have direct influence on solicitations. And, again, based on agency, they may have influence on solicitations, but these are not the people that you market that have the technical expertise. So it's an assumption going in because there's not a knowledge of knowing where they really fit. And so from things I would correct, it's make sure that you frame that conversation, as I mentioned before, of more of a win-win. What can you do to show them that you're capable so that they can market on your behalf and think of you when they see good acquisitions come down that fit your NAICS code and your capabilities? People don't think of it in that fashion.
Okay, I have a question from Kathleen Schneider. She says, do OSBUs have influence in the solicitation development?
So we just touched on that. And depending on the agency, they do. And so that's why it's extremely important for you to understand how that agency works. And I'll give you an example. USAID, which is very focused on foreign affairs, and 3/4 of their acquisitions are done outside the United States. So that means only 1/4 of their money comes from here in the States. And that's a problem for them because for small business numbers, the outside the United States acquisitions and awards are not counted. So that that small business office has been escalated from an empowerment standpoint within the agency, and now every solicitation almost has a why can't small business do it within the here in the United States, which gets that small business office further up in the acquisition strategy. Department of Energy has the exact same relationship with their contracting folks. That small business director has been there a long time. And again, the question is always, why can't a small business do it? So the more, what I've found is the more small business friendly that agency is, as well as the more the small business director has been in place, the further up in the food chain of the solicitation process that small business seems to be.
My next question is from Dentral. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. How do you identify your target agency?
That's a much larger conversation. And we probably actually have another webinar set up on how do you do business development with the federal government. So I would probably first I would check that. My contact information is included. I am more than happy to, via email, set up a time to talk on the phone. But I think the easiest way we always talk about is hopefully you can find someone. Once you find out the agencies that are buying your product, and by that very quickly, I would go on to FedBizOps, FBO, and I would do a quick search on NAICS codes and see what agencies have bought your product or service in the recent past. And then I would find companies that are doing that type of work and approach them about subcontracting. But it's a much larger conversation about how do you figure out your target agencies.
I have another question here from Precinct, and I once again, I believe this might be a larger conversation, but the question is, what advice do you have for a company that has a track record but is trying to get their first federal contract?
It'd be actually the exact same answer that I just gave. So, as I mentioned, there are webinars, and Scott, you might want to point the folks to the marketing to the federal government. I think if you have a track record, you're a step up than somebody that's just doing that for the first time, which just should not dissuade anybody, but it's a great place to be. And again, I would find either a teaming partner, another business that you know is doing like work or knows the agency has that they're working at has a need for your type of product or service and try to work with them to get into the agency. That would probably be my first entree, as well as I mentioned, from figuring out which ones to talk to first, go out to FBO to see who's bought your product or service in the past. It's always easier to get in via a warm intro than to start cold, though.
I have a question here from Julie, and it's a question I hear all the time. What do you do when the OSBU doesn't understand all the intricacies of the WSB program without being viewed negatively?
So it's a great question, actually, and WIP is doing a lot of work in Washington. So one, if you're not already involved in WIP, not to plug WIP, but I will, you want to get involved in WIP and get involved in the procurement committee because we're doing a lot of work from the procurement committee to do education on exactly how to reach out to the OSBU to educate them on the Women in Small Business program. I'll tell you the secret in what we do, though, is that if you go out to the SBA's website, they actually have posted how you market as a small business, the Women in Small Business, as well as what the contracting officers need to know. And our job as industry is to understand both of those documents better than anybody else so that when there are questions about it, we can answer them first. So it's all documented out on SBA's website under, if you just Google under SBA.gov, WOSB, the documents are out there.
I have a question from Kathleen Schneider here. She asks, if you have any thoughts on how to deal with OSDBU for the Department of Defense?
The Department of Defense proper or one of the services? I think that would be my first question. Because you're going to want to go to the actual services, I think, unless you're actually trying to get something up at, like, OSD. But, and again, at the service level, you want to see how they're actually doing their awards. So, for example, Air Force is very similar to USAID in that almost 80% of their awards are tied up with 20 primes on long-term major weapons programs. So they only have 20% of their entire listed budget, published budget, to actually award from a procurement standpoint. And then you look at, from there, based on NAAQS code, you look and you can find that literally out of all of the contracting sites for the Air Force, there's only two that those awards are going out to. One is major IT systems, and I honestly can't remember what the second one is. I want to think it's a building and architecture and engineering. But it's very, and those are not, neither of those offices are here in D.C. One's in Atlanta, Georgia, and again, I forget what the second one is. But it's that type of information based on where you want to go in the DOD that you need to find out, and all of that is posted on the services websites.
Okay, Raj asks, I recently contacted an OSDBU's office about a contract that was ending, but there's no response. What should I do next?
Be patient. Realize you're one of thousands of small businesses that are trying to get in touch with them. And I can tell you what I personally do is I will just go every week, I will send that email. So every Thursday, I will send that email. And I always go back to the same email and I just forward it and erase the date that I previously sent it. So I'm not, it's, there's no stick in the eye about the fact that I had emailed them before. They are so busy. And remember, there's maybe one person handling women-owned small businesses, and that same person may be handling other socioeconomic statuses. So never take it personally. It's just a workload issue. And every time you talk to them, you want to be upbeat and friendly, and again, not stick them in the eye that they did not get back to you the fourth or fifth time that you asked them, because the sixth time was just your right time for getting in there. So a once-a-week email at the most is good, and I would tell you that email is better than phone calling because it's something that they can do on their BlackBerry, it's something they can do when they're on the run, and they won't have to sit there and listen to all the voicemails that they get. So keep it friendly, keep it upbeat, you know, once a week, once every other week, and they'll return your email at the, within a period of time.
Okay, my next question is from Julie. She says, how do you market yourself? You sell products nationally but can't meet with every OSDBU and every agency at every base in the country.
Right, and that's a great point, and that goes back to the questions that we had before, which is you need to figure out what your target is. From a number standpoint, I can tell you that a lot of the presenters here in WIF that I know very well that talk about that actually have businesses that do business development for other companies, for the federal government, and also teach you how to do that, they'll tell you two, no more than three agencies do you really own at any point in time. So even though you sell products nationally, if you can get in one that you know buys your product, then it's going to be a win. And if I'm you, I'm doing exactly what I told the last question. I'm doing that once a week email until I get in with that small business person. I'm talking to them about my product. And while I'm in there, I'm also saying, and I know your other locations, A, B, and C, buy this product as well. Is there a way that you can help me get in touch with them and leverage the relationship internally versus trying to go national? You're right. It's not something that you can do easily, and you're going to spend a lot of time and a lot of time in follow-up trying to keep all those balls in the air versus focusing on one to three that's manageable for a person to really form a relationship with, and just make sure that you're informed and you know where else you want to go so that when you get into that first office, you can ask them for help to get to the next one.
Hey, Kathleen asks, are OSDBOOs involved in the decision to issue a sources sought? The solicitation is being formed, but the organization does not seek out sources. Is it very likely that we'll get many new WSBs or EBWSBs?
Okay, I'm looking at the question. So yes, if it's, most of your agencies have a number. If it's above a certain number, pricing threshold, that it needs to go out for a sources sought to prove that there's not at least two small businesses that can actually use it, and the small business office would be involved in that. As far as whether they go outside or inside, that's a government decision. And I don't know if there's anything that mandates them on actually using, especially with what's happened in the last year from an insourcing standpoint, and they finally decided what's the best of ideas. There's nothing in there that mandates that they have to outsource all these type of tasks, so that's not the right way to look at it. You really just need to base your marketing on those people that do outsource that type of product or service that you're marketing.
Okay, I have another question here. Cheetah asks, I live in the U.S. Virgin Islands and would like to know if I have opportunities to get contracts as a woman in small business here.
Again, once again, I'd probably, if I were you, I would go back out to said BizOps, query on your NIACS code, and see if they're buying anything from the locations, in the U.S. locations that are near you. That's the only way to actually know that the answer to your question.
Well, if there's no further questions, please feel free to email me at snolen@whip.org. That's snolen@whip.org, and I can pass them along to Jennifer. So I want to thank Jennifer for her outstanding presentation, and thank everyone on the line for joining us today. Invite everyone to take a moment to share your thoughts on the brief feedback survey that will accompany the presentation and links via email, which you should receive in the next few days. The presentation will also be posted on GiveMe5.com under the Resources tab. GiveMe5 is part of a larger program series, Women, Money, and Opportunity, which brings you a wide range of resources to educate women business owners. Please check our program websites for upcoming webinars. Don't forget to join us next week for GiveMe5 141, Intro to Teaming, Wednesday, February 29th, 2012 at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific. WIP is a nonprofit, nonpartisan public policy organization advocating on behalf of nearly 1 million women business owners representing 60 business organizations. Don't forget to get involved. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact the WIP staff. I'd like to thank you again, Jennifer, for a phenomenal presentation as usual, and thank everyone for joining us today. Have a good day.